What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Dive Bomb Squadcast. I'm your host, Matt Judy, and we got episode 93 coming at you. We got a special in-studio guest today. One of my idols and the man that taught me everything I know. I got my dad in the studio today. How you doing, Dad?
Good, Matt. Nice to be here.
Yeah. Marshall Judy in here. I had to get old Dad in here. We had us a good day yesterday. We moved a couple round bales for my beef cows and had a few beers at the bar. And I was like, we got to get him in the studio. Did you ever think that 20 years ago, Jumping Ducks would end you up in the Dive Bomb Squadcast studio in my own house?
No, I had no idea it would turn out to be like this.
Wild. I think about that sometimes. Jumping my first ducks in the ditches, and now I'm running the Dive Bomb Squadcast 21 years later. That's insane. But I kind of wanted to dabble into that. My dad is the one who got me into hunting, but we didn't really decoy too many ducks. We would just go out and jump shoot them at first. Do you remember those days out taking me out there?
Well, I do, because with your three older sisters, they didn't mind shooting targets and trap shooting. But when you came along and about 8 years old, you decided you wanted to do some hunting with me. And I got excited about that, to take you out in the field and do the jump shooting like we used to do when I was a teenager, and shooting some ponds and creeks. And we started out just on that level, and it was real fun.
Yeah, it was. It was the only thing that I ever wanted to do. But I remember old school, back in the day, they don't do this anymore. I had to take my hunter safety test in person in the local fire department. And I don't think kids do that anymore at all. I think it's all online now. I think they might do the field test. But I had to sit for, I forget how many classes it was, multiple classes for hours at a time to get my hunter's ed. And then after that, the only thing I wanted to do was have Dad take me out and shoot ducks, and that was it. It was pretty fun. I think the first ones I was kind of ground sluicing them out of the old local dairy lagoons, and then I finally shot one out of the creek. But I remember a couple teal I would shoot, and Dad had some old snow boots or something, and he'd go trudging into the manure lagoon trying to retrieve my teals for me.
Yeah, I was your retriever, but I do remember a few of the first ones that you got good hits on that were flying, and it was such an exciting time for you to finally realize you could shoot a duck out of the air instead of ground sluicing it. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I remember the very first one I ever shot. We were walking a creek line. It was a big old greenhead that jumped up out of the ditch, and I finally killed it out of the air, and I can still picture it to this day.
That was pretty exciting.
It was. I just had to crack me open a Busch Light. What are you drinking on?
Oh, it's a Kolschen Heliotrope.
Dad's got the IPA and I got the Busch Light. That's quite the different ends of the spectrum. Yeah, but I remember we would set out a couple times. We would set out decoys, and then we'd be sitting on this little log out there, and then you would fall asleep, and then I'd just be out there looking for ducks trying to come in. I don't even think we ever had any come in when we were setting decoys.
Not really, because I never knew how to run a call. The decoys were just something that was handed down maybe from a relative.
Yeah,
I didn't know what to do with them, but we threw them out and tried to make it looked like something that ducks wanted to come into, but we didn't run a call at all. So it was just by luck that we got anything over the decoys.
Yeah, it was. And I used to wear this face mask, this camo face mask out there, and I can still smell it to this day. It just had a certain smell to it. It just reminds me of hunting and hiding up on that log. And you would take out me and my cousin Scotty too. We have a couple pictures of us holding some ducks on a hanging on a broom pole. I might have to put a picture in here of that. And that was from out jumping lagoons and all that stuff. And we were just little guys, and that fueled the fire to what I do now. And then I kind of got my hunting license or driver's license, and then just went crazy after that.
I know we had to run a pump shotgun, and that's all I grew up with was a pump shotgun. And you always kind of thought at the later years was there's a different way of doing this. There's automatic shotguns that we should be shooting. And I couldn't adapt that. until later on I finally got an automatic shotgun.
Yeah, he said, you don't need to be wasting all those shells. You'd be shooting three at a time, which is funny because I got a couple youth hunters I hunted with last week, and they were dumping all three shells at all these ducks and just burning through shells.
Yeah, that's the difference.
Yeah. Let's dabble into like a little bit of when you were growing up, the little bit. You didn't hunt a whole lot, did you?
No, just growing up on the farm, we would just go out to the lagoons or the ponds or the little ditches that were on the farm, and we would just jump some ducks if we could. We never called them in, never used a decoy set. It was just mostly streams and ponds and jump shooting. A little bit of bay shooting, but we'd jump them on the bay too. We never went out brant hunting in the boats like we have done a little bit of, but it was pretty low key. I know that for sure.
I remember one time you said you shot a brant that had like a piece of plastic on its neck or something like that.
I wish I had that right now, and I'm trying to find a picture of it because we got a brant one time out at the bay, and you know, I didn't know what it was. I thought it's got a collar on it. No big deal. Now I wish I had the collar, but I also wish I had a picture of that darn brant.
He told me that one time, and I was like, you shot a collared brant and probably threw the collar in the trash because you didn't even know what it meant.
Yep.
That still burns me to this day. I wish I could have it sitting right here on my desk or on my little collection back here, something like that. That'd be crazy. That just, oh my gosh, a collared brant. Do you even remember what color it was, or just a piece of plastic?
It was black and white, had some numbers etched into it.
Gosh, dang. You
know, but other than that, I never shot a banded duck in the days. So, yeah. You know, to see you shoot some banded ducks with your friends and decide who gets the band was kind of pretty cool to see that come around.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You were on one of our hunts where I'm the only widgeon band that we've ever shot in my entire lifetime. That was a pretty special one. We've had some pretty good hunts. Dad will come out a few times a year. He doesn't hunt all season long, but usually in January we get out a few times and usually do pretty good. Sometimes laying in the mud, sometimes get it easy. Like he came out on the last week or the last day of the season, and it was some easy, easy good hunting that people just dream about. It was frosty and not wet. And I remember 2 years ago, he came out in like jeans or something, laying in a layout.
I was wearing my blue jeans, and some of your friends called me out on it too.
Yeah, so I had to get him a pair of dive bomb waders after that. I was like, I can't be having Dad show up in blue jeans and get all soaking wet. That's something I would do. So, yeah, he hunted all sorts of conditions with me, some good hunts, some bad hunts. What do you think one of your favorite ones we've had is?
Oh, I think just walking the ditches when they're first starting out, jumping them, seeing you get excited about a bird that jumps out of the ditch and try to take a few shots at it, probably two only at the pump shotgun. But those were some of the funner times with, you know, jump shooting off the ditches.
Yeah, when I was just a little guy. Yeah, that's crazy. It's so long ago now. I think my favorite one was probably the widgeon band hunt, just because we've killed so many widgeon and they're super rare and just got to even see one in person. But also, these recent ones, running drifter the last 2 years, have been pretty fun.
Yeah. Well, I've never had a dog growing up. We didn't do that. And you have drifter now. And what an impressive dog that is.
Yeah. He gets after it. We, just this recent hunt we went on, I think we shot like 84 widgeon or something like that. Yeah. And he retrieved like 60. We had to help him out. There was a couple rain outs that were so big, Drifter couldn't keep up with it. But for the most part, he was pretty dialed. And it's cool to, you know, have a good dog that Dad can see run around and see what I do with him out there after all his training that I sent him off to. It's really impressive to watch that dog work. So I like laying out there with Drifter on my left and Dad on my right in a layout, and it's just some of the best times we've had out there.
Yeah, that was some good hunting, and I think Drifter's a real nice addition to your hunting program that you're working. He's a heck of a dog.
Yeah, and yeah, it's different too because we didn't have any dogs growing up. Like we never had a family dog, or we just had farm animals and like a cat. But so it was different. Pretty much everybody knows this. I was kind of anti-dog simply because I just, you know, didn't grow up around them. And I was like, oh, I guess it's time to get one. And I got Drifter. And like you guys know, I own a dog kennel now, too. So somehow they, like, run my life now.
From one extreme to the other.
Yeah, exactly. So I have three older sisters, and I'm the youngest boy. How stressed out were you on when Sarah came out as number three girl and still no boys yet?
Well, I wasn't stressed out then, but I'm going to tell you, when you were born, I was pretty dang excited to have a boy in the family. And it's been a good ride, and it's been a lot of fun. And like I said earlier, the girls didn't necessarily want to kill anything. They didn't mind shooting a weapon and doing some target practice and that, but when you wanted to go hunting and, you know, get into the duck hunting and even the deer hunting, mm-hmm. that was pretty exciting for me as a dad.
Yeah, I mean, my sisters are go-getters 100%. Dad taught them right. They're very very, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, independent. Know how to do everything. They can shoot stuff. They can build stuff. They can take care. Like, they're just rock stars of women. It's pretty impressive. I might have to get them on here. We might have to go on a family hunt.
Do a family hunt. The girls would like that.
We could even maybe drag mom out there. I don't.
She would tag along.
No, she'd want to babysit Jolie while we're doing all that.
Yeah, that's true.
We should get you out there and bring Teresa, Maria, and Sarah out. I'm telling you, you guys would love watching this. My sisters are a little bit crazy, and they are very entertaining, and it would be so fun.
Oh, I think that'd be a blast to get them out in the field, and they could see that how you set up and how you run Drifter, and
yeah,
the adventure that you go on when you go hunting. That would be fun for the girls.
Yeah, they know. They see everything on the media, but I don't think they've ever experienced, you know, the craziness of leading and running a hunt and seeing actually what I do out there in the field and just get it done. That would be, and they've been begging me to take them out for years. They actually made me sign a stupid little contract like 5 years ago saying I'd take them out hunting, and I never have.
Well, you need to play the video from your wedding when they did a skit about hunting at your wedding.
And they had a dive bomb bag up there with them.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, they pulled out an energy drink out of a dive bomb bag when they were giving their wedding speech for me. Gosh, yeah, we'll get them. I should next year we should do a hunt and then bring them in here to get them on the podcast. Oh, they would love that.
Yeah, that would be a good thing to do, Matt.
Yeah, it would. But yeah, you've raised some good children. My sisters, I'm proud of them, but I'm glad I came in as the last boy and saved my dad from having an all-girl family, which I am off to. I wouldn't say wrong. I love my little baby girl that I have, but of course my first baby was a girl because it just runs in our family like that. We've been surrounded by women our whole lives.
Yep, that's for sure.
But I kind of want to talk about that last hunt we just had because it was probably the best one that you and me have ever been on. And I'm telling you, this was world-class widgeon hunting. Like, people would, all over the world, like, it was one of my best hunts I've ever been on. We shot 84 widgeon. I picked out a Eurasian. My buddy Cody picked out a Eurasian. We shot a really nice, creamy white one. It was just, shot some honkers. Dad got to shoot his first honk. I didn't even know that. Yeah. I didn't know until we shot that honker that you'd never shot a goose before.
Yeah, that was my first goose ever, and it was fun to shoot that goose. It was huge. That was a big bird. But I wanted to say that I was wishing I would have spoke up about the pintail because I haven't shot a pintail yet. And we had them landing in your spread like crazy, but we weren't shooting them. We were waiting for that Eurasian to come back around.
Yeah, yeah, you should have said something. But I didn't want to ruin the all widgeon. We had all widgeons and no mallards. If we would have shot a pintail, we would have ruined the perfect widgeon limit.
There'll be another time to shoot a pintail.
Oh, yeah. There? We'll get you a pintail next year, which is crazy because pintails usually will flare out at like 60 yards. They'll circle you. Every duck hunter knows this. Pintails are so finicky. And that day they were just like landing like 20 yards in front of us. These big old long sprigs on them. So we'll get your pintail next year. But it was an unreal hunt, huge 100 wads. We had like smaller groups come in. We had 12 guys on this hunt. It was the last day of the season. It was time to have some fun and cut loose and just kind of get after them. But we had a wad of probably 300 or 400 come in, and that one was going to be special. And some guys piped off. They shot on the other side of the field and kind of flared them out. But still, just to see that sheer amount of widgeon. I think that's the biggest duck decoy flock that we decoyed when you've been on a hunt with me.
Oh, it was the biggest easily. One I've seen yet. That's for sure. And that was an exciting hunt. You know, the cold temperature, the frost on the ground, the sun coming up, the bluebird day that it was.
Crazy.
That was my perfect hunt right there.
Yeah.
Not slogging through a potato field full of mud. I've been on some strange ones with you, but that was a good one to get to. And your layout blinds were perfect. And
yep.
It was a good group of people, too. They all
it was a fun crew.
Had a fun time. And it was one of the best hunts I've been on, that's for sure.
And you got to see a Eurasian get shot while looking at it. We had this year. I picked out a Euro. We had like a few birds left to go. We're like, all right, let's slow down and start looking for these Euros because we had the sun at our back and it was bluebird prime. These things were just beaming. You could see their eyes like, oh, you could see everything. So I think we were like three flocks in, and then I picked out a Euro. I just saw a red head and I followed it on a spin in like a flock of like 100 of them. And then it went belly up right above me. I didn't even say anything. I just popped up and shot it. But it ended up being a juvenile one. It had a pretty red head, but it wasn't like mount worthy. It had no white patches, but still I picked one out and I was like, oh man, it kind of just looks like shit. I was like, we need another one. So then like three flocks later, we spun this group like three times. And then I hear somebody way down in the layouts. They said, Choke's on one or Cody's on one. And I was like, okay, there is one in this flock. So I start scanning and they banked on that left. Do you remember seeing that front bird come in?
Well, I do, but you have an eye for it. I don't.
Well, I remember seeing it. He was leading a flock of like 100-plus widgeon. He, right in the front. He was like trying to beat all the rest of the ducks to the front. I'll never forget it. I wish I would. I only had my I filmed it on the Meta glasses. But I wish I would have had my big camera on that being zoomed into him because he was trying to race everybody to the front. And then I was like, somebody. And then Cody was already on it. And he just smashed it. And that thing was a mounter. I think Cody's going to – I think he took that one home. But that was just a special hunt alone just to stop. You know, we already had a great hunt by then just to stop and start sifting through them a little bit on the last day of the season and see a Euro get shot. Two of them get shot. That just doesn't happen very often. People shoot quite a bit of Euros around here, but I usually don't start sifting through them. So it was cool to switch that up and – see Cody smash that one and just he sniped it out of a huge group. No, there was no collateral or anything, just a clean shot, dead, and the bird wasn't even mangled either. It was a beautiful Euro.
I can tell you and your friends have your eye for them because I wasn't able to really pick it out. I was asking you questions that day. Hey, what do you look at for that? And you were telling me, but I mean, you guys spied those things the minute they came into the range.
Yeah, we see a lot of widgeon. So if you see something odd in a flock, you can pick them out pretty good. And we got pretty good eyes for following them, you know, on that when they do that swing out front. Mm-hmm. You just keep your eye on them the entire time when they come in and just pull up and shoot them. But those Euros, one of the dead giveaways is they have big silver bodies on them. So when they bank – they're just they stick out just a not a lot. They you can see it. They're just a little bit lighter. So when they bank, you're like, oh shit, there's a big old silver bodied one. That's definitely got to be a euro. And then you see their red heads. But the honkers were playing. We started off. Oh, it was so slow. These widgeon made us wait for like 2 hours in the layout before they even started flying. It was like shooting time was 7:20 and it was 9:30 when they started flying.
Yeah, you got some honkers in there though earlier. That was good. That was fun to shoot some Canadian geese.
Some big old honkers. Those started us off. I was like, oh boy, are we about to just take a zero? Or where are these things? They got to be coming. There was a ton of them in the field the night before. And we had one group of honkers come in. We shot those. Drifter had a really long retrieve on one of them. And
I got a picture of Drifter carrying that big old honker. It was almost bigger than he was.
Dad sent a picture to the family group and said, Drifter's lifting weights this morning. That's for hunting a honker three times his size. I was laughing, but he ran down a big old crippled honker at like 200 yards and tackled it and brought it back. And it's impressive when he drags those things. Drifter's only, he's only like 55 or 65 pounds. He's not huge. He's kind of a short, he's smaller guy. And you get a big old January freaking bull honker next to him, it makes him look small. It's crazy, but that was cool that you got to shoot your first ones. And so we finished that up. We're lining up the pile. And I go sober every season. And Dad brought a case of beer out because we lost one of our good hunting buddies, TH. If you've seen him, he's one of the older guys that hunts with us. If he's listening, we miss you, man. Like, he moved back down to Texas, and his tradition was bringing a case of Busch Lights on the very last day so he can drink a few, you know, and hang around the pile. So Dad carried on TH's tradition this year.
Had to carry on what TH started with, bringing a 12-pack or 18-pack of Busch Light to the hunt to celebrate the hunt and the last day of the season.
Yeah, it was good. That was that is probably one of my favorite beers of the year, is that last day Busch Light when everything's done, the pile's there, the hunt's over, I don't have to stress anymore, and I just crack open a cold one of these. Yeah, and sit there and reflect on the season. It's one of my favorite days of the year, actually, and just kind of hang out with your buddies and sip on a few beers and think about, you know, the season that we had. So it's a pretty special day. I love the last day of the season. And yeah, those beers just hit different. Like, and after not drinking for like 4 months, you get a little baby buzz after like one and a half of them.
Hey, I'm going to change it up on you. I'm going to flash back to a bay hunt you did with one of your friends that had a boat.
Oh, jeez.
And you started out. I helped you launch the boat. You guys had your decoys. You'd painted them up black. You were going to go out for brant hunting. And it was kind of a nice morning, calm. And it wasn't long. And you guys were coming back in 3-4 foot seas. And that boat was almost swamped because it was a river boat you guys were using in the bay, kind of like your little bass boat that you tend to use in the bay, which I don't 100% agree with, but you watch the weather well. This day you didn't watch the weather well, and I've got a video I'm going to share with you.
Oh, my gosh.
That was your friend's boat, and you guys got lucky that day. Somebody was looking over you because you made it back. You made it back safe. We had to pull the boat up with the truck and the winch and rescue you, but you didn't get stranded out there in the water. But
we almost sunk it.
That was an interesting hunt that you went on. And then you left your decoys out because you had to abandon them. And my brother and I went out the next week in a 14-foot lun and actually retrieved your decoys for you.
And you shot a duck off of it.
We shot some ducks off of it. So that was kind of a fun time. But I'm going to remind you of that bad weather day that you guys had.
I know you probably did some dumber stuff than that back when you were younger, growing up on the ocean.
Yeah,
but
you were careful, and I learned to be careful too out in the salt water because it can turn nasty fast.
We figured that out firsthand. You were there when we launched the boat. It was flat calm when we launched. We're like, oh, we're just going to go out here. And then all of a sudden, we set our two long lines, and the wind kicks up like out of nowhere going ripping like 20 miles an hour, and all of a sudden the waves start swelling like 5 feet. We have five dudes on an 18-foot river sled out in the ocean, and we start taking waves over the back. We're like, oh shit, we gotta get out of here. And we come hauling back and beached it, and we had a boat half full of water, and we luckily, it's a little bit. What do you think the depths were when we were out there? Probably 20 feet, maybe?
Oh, it was probably 20 feet.
Yeah.
It was a nasty day.
It was gross.
But it started out good. And I was there with you when you launched, and I thought, this is okay. You know, they can take a riverboat out in the bay. But it turned nasty pretty quick. And you learn from that. I know you learn from that. Yeah.
And somehow, you launched us, and then your identical twin brother, Mike, my Uncle Mike, just randomly showed up, and I was like, hey, I need your truck. We got to pull this boat. And he was like, what are you guys doing with a boat full of water? I was like, we got to get this thing the hell out of the water. So he backed up his Duramax to the dike and pulled the boat out. And I was like, wow, that was nice, because we didn't even have a rig to pull that thing out.
I'm going to send you the videos I have, because your friend was trying to sell that boat. So I took a video of his boat running out in front of the beach house in the calm water.
Yeah.
And I have a video of it being swamped as you guys.
Oh, you got the before and after?
I do. And I think you should show those, because that's a lesson to be learned right there.
Absolutely. I will never test the ocean like that ever again. Well, I guess that's a lie. I take a 17-foot bass boat out in the ocean, but I make damn sure I watch the wind. Because I will only go out there if it's dead flat calm and it's like a high pressure ridge where I know there won't be wind for multiple days. But yeah,
like boats, I said, you learned your lesson.
Oh yeah, I did. I need a better boat. I need a bigger boat. I got some janky stuff going on.
Yeah, I'd like to see you have a bay boat.
Yeah, because then we could go salmon fishing and crab. I know I got a buddy with a bay boat, but still, it'd be nice. You just texted me a picture earlier today. You were cleaning out one of my old truck toolboxes and found a homemade Silhouette decoy in there.
I did, and that was prior to Dive Bomb, I know.
It was. That was years before Dive Bomb.
You and your cousin Scotty were building your own decoys out of cardboard, and it had the authentic look of a Dive Bomb decoy, but I didn't think it was. And
no. Nope.
You confirmed that's something you guys made back in the day.
Yeah, that was a homemade one.
A Silhouette.
A homemade Silhouette. I was hunting homemade Silhouettes before Dive Bomb, you know, made them cool again. You know, when Dive Bomb came back on the scene, they made Silhouettes very popular. And this was like 6 years before that, 6 or 7 years before that. I was just making my own out of cardboard and plywood and rivets and galvanized steel stakes. Gosh, those things were so heavy to lug out into the field. We had like a tote full of them. But I killed a bunch. It gave me a flashback. And my dad sent me a picture. I was like, holy shit, that's what I used to hunt over, because I was just a poor young kid who didn't have the money for all the fancy decoys. Hunting over homemade silos, and we used to shoot ducks and geese over those things like crazy. That was crazy.
That's cool.
Yeah, he sent me that picture. He's like, look what I just found. I was like, oh my gosh, I should put that in like a glass case when my hunting career is all said and done, with just everything that I want in there, because that's, you know, a part of me that I used those homemade Silhouettes for years.
And then,
good thing you saved it. There's also a lot of junk up in the barn loft still that I probably got to throw out, some old collections that I don't use anymore.
Well, I think you got a storage unit full of that too, right?
Oh, yeah. I got all kinds of old crap.
I can't say anything bad about that. I think you learned that from me.
Hey, I was looking at your equipment pile in the back 40 the other day, and I was like, holy shit, this is all going to be mine one.
Have fun with it.
Yeah, you can't say anything about that. You taught me everything I know.
No, I can't.
But, so back to that story where we swamped the boat in the same spot. I think it was either before or after. We had shot a brant together, and it was my first brant that I've ever shot. Apparently not dad, because he shot a collared one and threw it in the garbage. But we sent that brant off, and it's getting mounted, and that's a pretty special piece. That's a memory I'll have forever, you know. We didn't even decoy them. They were kind of just flying over the boat, but I was so excited when we shot those first ones on the brant season out there.
Yeah, that was fun brant hunting out of the boat. I'd only done beach hunting for Brant and growing up. So going out in the boat, setting some decoys was a lot of fun for me.
Yeah.
And we were successful at it. We got a couple and we're going to have them mounted. So
yeah. Even more special too. It's in front, right in front of our, my dad's side of the family's, beach cabin that has been in the family for a very long time. So kind of a sentimental piece, shooting a Brant right in front of the family cabin that we've all spent a ton of time at, right on the ocean. That's that'll be awesome getting that thing back. We got to pick out a piece of driftwood from the beach right in front of there and send it off to them.
Yeah, that'd be fun to get that mounted. Speaking of the beach cabin, I'm just going to say, before my brother and I were 15 years old and couldn't drive, we would do a lot of hunting around the farm, but my mom would drive us out to the beach house once in a while to do some winter hunting, and we'd cut them up over the dike with our shotguns. Out in the beach was on the bay was some butterballs.
Oh yeah, so, you've always called those butterballs.
You know, they were sea ducks, I guess you call them today, but they were butterballs. So my brother and I kind of blasted away and shot a few butterballs, and my mom says, "Okay, boys, go get your kill. You're gonna eat them." And we says, "Oh, mom, those are crap ducks. You don't eat them." And she
tastes
said,
like
"No,
fish.
You eat everything you're gonna you eat everything you're gonna kill." And you know what? We did. We went and got those ducks. We retrieved them. We killed them. And that's kind of what I instilled in Matthew when we started hunting. That
yep.
You harvest what you shoot, and it's been that way forever. But that's how I learned that.
Yeah, you were shooting the nasty tasting ducks and old grandma made you eat them. You probably never shot one again until I came along.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, that's wild. But yeah, we did. I remember, I can still visualize when we would go shoot ducks, you would just put a duck breast on a frying pan with just a piece of onion on it and then just dip it in ketchup or barbecue sauce or something and eat. I can still smell those duck breasts getting cooked.
Well, you know, the widget hunt we did 2 weeks ago or so, I took those duck breasts. I did a little bit of sauteing. I went online, and what I cooked this time around was a whole lot different than what I was cooking 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Mom sent me a picture. She was like, "He's eating his widget." And I'm like, "That actually looks good. It doesn't look like a fried piece of duck hockey puck yeah. on there with a piece of onion on it."
The internet and YouTube has helped that a lot.
Yeah, and I like making my goose tacos too. Oh, like those are I made that for the family one time. Those are phenomenal. That's why I like keeping the honkers, the big honkers, because the meat's just so good, and even mallards too. But the waterfowl recipes have gotten a lot better over the last 20
Oh, they
years.
Have. I think social media has helped the recipe department for waterfowl.
Yep. Yep. And yeah, we've been, I remember there's another hunt we went on last year in Drifter's first year. It was you, me, and Kelly. We shot a bunch of widgeon out there, and that was like 2 minutes from the house, so that was pretty fun. We didn't get to hunt that property this year, but Kelly missed out on a good one. Kelly,
yeah,
my dad's buddy Kelly, he likes to hunt too. I was like, "Hey, is Kelly coming on this crazy widgeon hunt we got?" And he said he was busy.
Yeah, he was busy that time, but I like that you are willing to take my friends out, my coworkers out with us when we go hunting.
Absolutely, yeah. We brought out my dad's coworker AJ with us on that last, the one we were just talking about, the last crazy one, and I think he was a little mind blown after that.
That's the biggest hunt he's ever been on.
Yeah,
he had a great time, and it was a successful hunt. So
yeah,
it was a lot of fun.
Well, I kind of want to end this one with one last funny story that I thought was funny. It's the most pissed off I've ever seen my dad at me in my life. It has nothing to do with hunting, but I was about 15 years old with my little cousin Scotty, and I think he was 14, and we brought home a Crown Vic that we bought for $300 off the side of the road. And so me and my cousin Scotty were rolling around with one of our older friends who had his license. I had no money. Scotty had a little bit. I don't know how he had it, but we roll up and we see this 90s Crown Vic, like old style cop car with a big old sign, cardboard sign, $300 on the window. And our eyes just lit up. We were like, "We need that." So our buddy takes us to the bank. My cousin Scotty gets $300. We paid this guy in $1 bills. Can you imagine getting that from like a 15-year-old? $1 bills. So we're driving, we're having the time of our lives, like, dude, we just got this car, this thing's freaking sweet, I don't even have my license yet, I don't think I'm driving it like 10 miles home, and I pull in, I thought he was going to be proud of me, and that was the most angry I have ever seen you at me in my entire life, and I was like, oh, I messed up. Mom's calling my aunt to come pick up my cousin. They're like, do you see what these guys just brought home? And how did you feel about that? Because I thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever done in my life.
Well, I know I popped your bubble on that one because it wasn't the coolest thing you'd ever done in your life. You didn't know what insurance was on a vehicle. You didn't know what having a driver's license was to drive a vehicle. And you came driving in the driveway with a Crown Vic with your cousin, so proud of that damn thing that it just shocked me. It was just shocking to see that you had a vehicle that you and Scotty had bought. And the first thing I said is, you got a title for that? And you said, a what?
I didn't know what that was.
You didn't know what a title was to a vehicle.
I didn't even know what a bill of sale was.
You know, I cooled down. We made the best of it. You guys drove that around the field for a year until you blew it up.
Yeah.
You had a good time with it. We sold it. We got a salvage title for it. It all worked out.
It.
But my first initial feeling was, what the heck have you done now?
That was the last boy. That's the youngest boy coming in with all the crazy wild stuff that the sisters didn't do. Oh, I remember it was a couple weeks. You let us keep the car for a little bit. We'd rip it around in the backfield and do donuts. And this dad always had rigs for us to drive too in the backfield. Yeah. So we had a lot of driving experience. There was a little Toyota truck, a little Honda Civic.
Golf carts, four-wheelers.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. So I was like, this is right up our alley. He always has this kind of stuff. He's going to be so proud of me for buying a Crown Vic for $300. It's got a 5-liter V8 in it. This thing got a big motor. Hell no. He was pissed off. One of my favorite stories to tell, you know, sitting around a fire or something. But I remember the day me and Scotty were out working on it. And we're like, man, we need to make this thing louder. And we didn't really know. And then we're like, how do we make this freaking thing louder? We got to cut this muffler. Or we were drilling holes in the muffler or something. And then dad comes around the corner. He's like, no. I'm going to show you how it's done, and just zips the muffler right off for us.
Had to grab the sawzall, saw the muffler off.
Yeah, he just sawed it right off, and I was like, see, I knew you a little bit like this a little after everything settled down a little bit.
The plastic seat in the back seat, because it was an ex-cop car, is what surprised me.
Yeah, I forgot it had the plastic seat in it still. Gosh, I wish I could have seen that, remembered that guy's face when he has a 14-year-old hand him $300. Hey, he was smart, though. He gave us a bill of sale, actually.
Well, he wrote out a bill of sale, but he was laughing all the way to the bank.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised he even did that. That's just one of my favorite stories, but It's been fun hanging out with Dad. We work on a lot of stuff together. He taught me how to build everything. He's an outstanding member of the community. Been on the city council for, 20 years.
Over 20 years.
Mayor for a couple years. Yeah. Taking charge through some big-time flood stuff. Taking care of the community. And helps a lot with the local high schools and their FFA programs. And very proud of what my dad's done. And everybody knows him around here. And just, I'm trying to be like that someday. Someday I'm going to be the mayor of this little town, too.
Well, Matt, I'm proud of what you've done with everything and growing up and getting your hunting stuff, your passion for hunting turned into a decent gig for you to
big time.
Make money and do good for the community and the people you work for. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about. Like I said earlier, from being a little 11-year-old kid jumping ducks to now working for one of the biggest companies in the game. And I remember you guys were a little standoffish. You know, I was like, hey, I got an opportunity to work for this company, blah, blah, blah. And you know, it took a couple of years, and I dove in, and you're like, I don't know, just think about it. And now sitting here, and it's crazy.
You've made some good life choices along the way, I'll tell you that.
Some good, some terrible, but most part good.
Mostly good.
Yep. Gosh. Right.
Well, I'm proud of what you've done, son. So you've taken your passion for hunting. You've turned it into something good. You've having fun with it. You've made a lot of friends with it. And Dive Bomb has been good to you throughout your career here with them.
Yep. I try to share a little bit of knowledge on the internet and share some with the younger local kids around here, because I know a lot of them look up to me, and I just try to, you know, follow the rules and post funny, cool, relatable stuff and keep it real. And, you know, that's really all that matters. But thanks for coming on, Dad.
Yeah, I'd like to say that youth hunt you did last weekend with some kids from the community that had to experience hunting with you. I know that they'll remember that for years to come.
Absolutely.
As one of the biggest hunting days of their life, because you took the time to take them out and show them what hunting was about in a decoy spread with a good hunting dog and
the whole process. Yeah,
I know you taught safety to them a little bit about how to shoot safely and be careful and not hurt each other. So good job, son.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, those kids had a blast out there on the youth hunt. There was four of them. We shot our 28. And, I just went through the whole process, setting a decoy spread. Some of them had hunted before, but still, you know, you teach gun safety, number one priority. Shoot your lanes. Don't swing over your buddies. Try to decoy them close. Don't sky bust. And those kids had a blast. They were burning shells, shooting wind, taking videos. Mm-hmm. I think they'll remember that for a long time. Even Vince and Oliver, too. I try to teach them some stuff, too. But those two remind me of me back in the day, big time.
Yeah.
Everybody's really seen Vince and Oliver were on here. You guys know how they are. And it's funny because they grew up on the same ditches, you know, that
we were shooting.
Because, it was their grandpa's farm, I think, that we, relatives' farm. Same exact area them boys are growing up, just like how I did in their hunting careers. And it's cool to see them get inspired, but... Cheers, man. Thanks for coming on. Heck yeah. We'll catch you guys on the next one. Thanks for listening.